to another episode of Untrue Crime, where fiction meets felonies. I'm Belle DeWing.
And I'm Alexandria Parker. Today's episode includes content warnings for stalking, dismemberment, sexual encounters, and gore.
This is your fair warning that this podcast uses explicit language before someone walks in at the wrong time. As a last warning, today's episode includes stalking, dismemberment, sexual encounters, and gore. This is a reminder that this podcast is fictional and for entertainment purposes, and has no real-life inspirations. Any similarities to real life is purely coincidental. Let's get this started, shall we?
We shall in just a moment, because we do have a brief announcement for our Untrue Crime listeners. After our hiatus that took a few months, we are finally putting the podcast back in motion. We apologize for the break. We were both moving overseas at different times, and it really threw a wrench in everything and like finding recording space.
I'm going in Nederland. Yippee!
So Belle is now located in the Netherlands, and I am temporarily located in Scotland. We're going to get the podcast moving again, but we're going to post bi-weekly for a little while until we start to go back to full, proper weekly episodes. But we have a good lineup this season, hopefully, so...
I think we do.
Anyway, that's our announcement.
Now we shall get this started. There's nothing that one can't find in the United States of America, the cultural crockpot of Earth. Space exploration, they're the blueprint.
NASA!
Innovations in agriculture, step aside, they're first in line. From being the home of some of the most iconic places on Earth, to hosting the largest economy on the planet, the sparkling cities of the U.S. have an impressive pull on the world around them. But amongst all the glitter of the country, to the average person of the planet Earth, there's one thing that the United States is undeniably excelling in. Media production.
This is making me miss home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's okay. Not for real. I have to remember where I came from here. I can't get lost in the glitz and the glamour of crumbling castles.
No, it's okay. I mentioned that.
I love castles, guys. I have never been more bamboozled than meeting Scottish people who are like, you see them all the time. They're just castles. And I'm like, but they're castles.
They're castles.
They're castles. You don't know how bad I want to walk around the castle, even if it has no roof now. I don't care.
My poor wife.
So many castles.
And every time I take pictures of things that she's seen. Movies, television, animation, music, you name it. The U.S. has done it, and the rest of the world isn't just consuming it. They're eating it up. Some of the world's biggest names come from the United States, and their cultural impact is undeniable. Don't get us wrong, there's plenty to criticize the US for, especially in the year 2024, but a culture is far more than their government.
Amen.
Besides, our story takes place in an alternative reality of the world we're in, so hold your comments until another episode. In the vast expanses of the States, there's one hub for music, film, paparazzi, where every person has imagined themselves at least once. Welcome to Hollywood, Los Angeles, California. You look so happy.
This is so fun.
You've never gone to California.
I have been to California, but I've not been to LA.
Ah. Oh, yeah. I forget you go to a state near there.
I go to Nevada a lot. So, yeah, therefore, not for prostitution, for the record.
Did I have to say that about the Netherlands? I'm not here for prostitution.
I have family there. Well, that's what everyone thinks about Vegas. They think about it's just sex and alcohol and gambling. And you know what? To a degree, they're right. But you know what? Also, there are suburbs.
So true. Neon lights keep the stars out of the sky and on the people wandering the streets. But that sure as hell doesn't stop the rent from being astronomical. This is a hub of the arts. From the waitress hoping to get recognized for the gigs she does just outside of town to the movie star in thick sunglasses that she's serving, no one can be quite sure if the flash of light is for the up-and-coming, the has-been, or the is-doing.
That is such a good introduction. You did a beautiful job.
The price of fame is just as immense as the pay of it. With names like Elizabeth Vogel, Audra Mayfair, and so many being chauffeured around, it's no secret that jobs surround the price of fame. For a household name like Delphine Poix, there's at least 10 people blowing off her phone at a time. her manager, her agent, her PR team, her social media team, the producer of the latest movie she's on, a makeup artist, her various different advisors, her latest boy toy, and who the public thinks is her latest boy toy. With so many moving pieces, the idea of a movie star is a machine. Then there's people that benefit from simply being next to the star. Her underrated co-star, her best friend's daughter, the aspiring actress that made her laugh, anyone who was lucky enough to be at the right place at the right time. And Briar Honeycutt happened to be that actress at the right place at the right time. With a small role in the film Reservation for One, she attributes her fame to her scene with Delphine Poix, in which her character, the love interest's best friend, reveals the great secret of the love interest to Delphine Poix's character. The impassioned scene was one of the many that made the film boom in the box offices, but of course, she wasn't the main character. This wasn't going to be her breakout role. It's no secret that Delphine is contracted with Scene, a distinguished agency run by her manager and close friend, who happened to be on set that day. She had caught Briar in her trailer and expressed her interest in signing her under one of her agents. Briar, presumably, rejected her offers, wanting to stay true to her agent at the time. In true agency fashion, though, she showed up to the set for other scenes that she had with Delphine and repeated her offer every time she was there. Her winning attempt was offering to manage her herself, an offer that not a soul in Briar's position could refuse. 5 years later, same management, same agent, and Briar Honeycutt has been in the spotlight and absolutely glowing in its shine. With a new nose and a little bit of extra lip, her face has been plastered wherever it can find a home. Movies, magazines, television, social media, talk shows, gossip columns, you name it, she's been the hook for it. She'd only really gotten her coffee, 4 times in the past year, and the last time she'd bumped into a girl and spilled it all on her. Even worse, she'd been a fan. Guilt bit Briar in the ass, and after treating the girl to another coffee and a chat, she swore that she'd have an assistant take care of the little things from then on. Her life took leaps and bounds away from what it had been, down to the way she woke up in the morning. See, Briar Honeycutt's morning routine used to begin on a single bed in an apartment shared with 2 other roommates. She used to roll out of her bed, throw on an outfit that looked nice but with no particular style attached to it, and snack her roommate's extra piece of toast. Everyone in the apartment knew that there was no actual logical reason to have an extra piece of toast. It was always just Briar's, but it made them all feel better about taking each other's food when it was extra and not specifically for them. Whoever was in the kitchen would chat about their plans for the day. Briar would always mention some kind of an audition, and she'd hitch a ride with a friend that was headed in the area anyways. Nowadays, Briar Honeycutt's morning routine started with her fingertips lazily reaching off her queen-sized bed in her 2-story LA house under her own name to grab the cup of hot coffee waiting for her. She took 10 minutes to simply be in the morning, a routine that she felt suited her. When half of her cup was drunk, she felt awake enough to tackle the day. She'd reach over her phone and check her schedule for the day. August 17th, she was shooting it in the evening for her movie and had a massage booked before that. She knew that she was going to have additions to her schedule. Her manager made sure of that. But with her 10 minutes of meditation over, she called for a man, Emmett Hale.
Mistake. You need man? More than 10 minutes of meditation before you call for a man.
More than 10 minutes of thought has to go into.
That's at least a 15-minute routine.
You have to really prepare yourself for that. Now, Emmett shouldn't be confused for a roommate, because both of them had homes in their own names. Emmett Hale was a director. Not on anything she'd worked on. She preferred rom-coms and he was a sucker for horror, but the name hadn't been new when they'd introduced themselves. Appealing to Briar's love for rom-coms, they'd had a meet-cute at a birthday party months prior. Appealing to Emmett's love for horror, she drunkenly stumbled into him and both fell into the pool. They sobered back up and planned a date, but they didn't really work as people. They did, however, work just fine as hookup buddies. They were both high profile, both attractive, and the sex was good, so why not?
Live your dream, Briar Honeycutt.
No, seriously. I respect it. And then on the news, Briar Honeycutt and Emmett Hale sex tape with 3 others. And that is the why not, in case you were wondering. With a flood of messages and missed calls from every single person on her team, her phone flickered on, headlight burned into it. It was a miracle that it took so long for something so serious to be leaked, but for the first time, Briar Honeycutt faced a true, honest-to-God Hollywood scandal. She didn't bother to look at her filming schedule that day, as she knew that she and Emmett were going to be in meetings aplenty, doing damage control. Obviously they were. Not just for the day, but the month was rearranged for them to both resolve the issue and keep further from the public eye. It was a toss-up between putting them in a relationship or distancing them from one another, and it eventually teetered to distance. Neither really wanted to see each other. It seemed to be a reminder of the situation at hand. On August 18th, Briar Honeycutt's morning routine started with a particularly long meditation period, as her phone had gone missing off her bedside table. Believing that she may have left it downstairs, she simply ignored it. She had to make her own coffee today anyways, and had planned to stare out upon her beautifully made garden surrounding her saltwater pool to think about the horrors occurring in her life.
Sorry, it's just funny.
No, I understand.
I mean, it's not. It's very sad, and it's unfortunate for her. Nobody should have to go through that. Your sex tape should never be leaked. This is your PSA. Don't make a sex tape.
Especially if you're famous.
If you're famous, you really shouldn't. And if you're a normal person...
Hey, if you're famous and listening to this podcast, why?
Post about it on Instagram.
No. We can't handle an influx of that many viewers while we're starting back up. Post about it on Instagram in 3 months. We'll be looking out for you.
And if you're a normal person and you make one, I mean, at least password protect that shit. This is also your PSA. If you send smexy pictures to somebody, don't have your face in it. Don't have anything identifiable in the background.
Why did you say smexy? We're talking about sex tapes and orgies.
Oh, you're right. Okay. If you send nudes, don't have your face in it. Don't have anything identifiable in the background. Don't let somebody leak those and trace it back to you, because while revenge porn is illegal, it's difficult to get prosecuted, and either way, your picture's already up on the internet. So, yeah.
And look up the laws for your state, because it differs between yes. each state.
Or if you're not from the U.S., I don't even know what your laws are. I hope that you're okay.
Yeah. We do have a lot of non-U.S. viewers, so.
We do.
You guys look it up, too.
Everyone should check. Everyone should take reasonable precautions. Okay, I'm all done with my parenting spiel.
Okay. However, by the time she made it downstairs, it was evident where not only her phone, but where all of her electronics were.
A pool!
Her saltwater pool!
Someone threw them in the pool to slut-shame her.
Her closest members of her team and three friends sat in her dining room, with a fresh cup of coffee for her on the table next to an empty, pulled-out chair. Each person in the room seemed to stare at her with a different expression. One was disgusted, unable to meet her eye, another teary-eyed, a third staring at her as though she had walked down covered in blood rather than her pristine white robe. After thorough questioning on both ends, her manager turned on her own laptop and turned it around to the star. Beloved actor Emmett Hale found murdered in his bed.
Another Hollywood scandal!
Another Hollywood scandal.
If this was on the internet and I lived in this world, I would be watching so many videos about this. I would be following the conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah.
I would do a podcast. I wouldn't do a podcast episode on it because I make untrue crime. And that would imply that it's true in that universe. But this is an interesting episode thus far.
Oh, thank you. It would probably come up in untrue crime. We would probably bring it up.
We probably would. I like this episode.
It's not done.
Oh yeah, I suppose it could always take a turn for the worse, and I could be like, actually, this is horrible.
I could introduce Big Hippo.
Yeah, you could.
Emmett Hale, 48, mixed race male, found unresponsive by his maid, handcuffed with pink, fuzzy kink handcuffs on his bed.
Ooh! The plot thickens.
He's dead and he's getting frisky.
Maybe that was part of it.
Emmett suffered a gunshot wound to the heart, with a carving of the shape of a heart across his chest, as well as having his penis cut off and stuffed down his throat.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's one way to deep throat. Don't put that in.
No, I'm keeping that in.
No,
It's so in theme with the episode. Blood was smeared across the wall, and printed photographs were stuck to it of himself and Briar's sexual encounters, none of which were screen grabs from the sex tape, along with a message. In magazine clippings across the wall wrote, "He ruined her."
Hollywood scandal.
It is a Hollywood scandal.
I'm going to say that for this whole episode.
Yeah, and you have every right to. I actually include a lot of news titles in this. Briar Honeycutt requested an interview with detectives, and her house cameras showed that she hadn't moved. Her electronics were searched for mentions of a hitman, but nothing incriminating was found. She offered as much information about him that she could, and gave dramatic insight as to his location for the past few weeks, but was overall no help. Briar knew the throat of Emmett Hale, and what was down it for that matter, but she didn't know much about him. It's a Hollywood scandal.
It's all right. I already talked about that scandal. I was already scandalized. I don't need to be scandalized again. I already know they're hooking him.
Okay. When questioned about the people in his life, she frequently came up empty-handed. She couldn't think of his closest friend, much less his worst enemy. She traded her contact information with the police, but they only saw her once more, after his girlfriend was detained for probable cause to his homicide.
His girlfriend!
His Hollywood
scandal.
Hollywood scandal. Briar, having had no idea about the girlfriend, was questioned about their relationship. Was questioned about their relationship, as well as her own with Emmett. His girlfriend was released a day later, as they were unable to point to any evidence that actually proved that she had done it. The investigation continuously turned up empty-handed. There was no unexplained DNA in his room. The pictures pressed into the bloodied wall had no replicas of them online. The cameras of his house and his neighbors had all gone out at exactly 9 p.m. The windows were all locked. The security system was activated. The killer had come right through the front door. They had checked everyone who owned a key, but nothing came up. Every road that they followed led them to another dead end. As clear as it was that they were dealing with someone with espionage levels of navigating a murder, there was no stopping the investigation. And for that matter, life didn't stop for anyone besides Emmett either. Briar Honeycutt still had a movie to film.
So he had to have invited his killer into the house.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe he was doing a hookup, but like...
Or he left his door unlocked. He could just be an irresponsible homeowner.
It's a security system. A lot of security systems auto-lock your door. They like beep at you if you don't press the buttons and get your door locked. I don't know. I bet he knew his killer. Not necessarily like new.
Nude?
Maybe he like...
His killer?
Yeah. Nude. Maybe it was just someone he was gonna have a hookup with and cheat on his girlfriend with again.
Well, I mean, we already know of 4 people, so.
This is true.
What's stopping him from number 5?
Death.
Briar was shaken, of course. Everyone was. She had been instructed to take a break from social media, that her team would make a statement and she would focus on acting. They would alert her to anything pertinent, but from then forward, for her own good, she needed to stay off the web. Briar threw herself into work, focusing on her movie, following the motions. Eventually, the news passed, the media grabbed onto the new, exciting scandal, and life slowly returned to normal, even the news titles. Justice Red's Secret Child, Skylar Hyde Better Hide, Racist Comments Go Viral, Logan Morton Gay, you know, the usual. Eventually, everything seemed to die down, with all humor intended in my comment. Because, die.
Ha.
Thank you. The world was focused on who banged who, what that girl wore on the red carpet, what was happening in that third world country, oh no, so sad, time to move on. The world didn't hang on to one topic for too long, and Briar found that when they moved on, it was easier for her to. In the few months away, she'd been spending plenty of time with her co-star, Evie Patel, whose bright personality kept her stable. While they were at her house, the two ended up performing a stage kiss offstage, which is better known as a kiss. I'm sorry, that was a really lame joke. Sparks flew, hearts bonded, and girlish giggles followed. One thing led to another, one's legs opened for another, and everyone knows where the story goes from there. Are you gonna say it again?
Hollywood scandal.
All but a week later, there the titles were. Briar Honeycutt and Evie Patel, the new power couple? Briar Honeycutt, lesbian? They sure as hell were. Kitschy titles all aside, they were happy. They were going on dates that could have been in the romance section of the websites that gossiped about them. Their teams both wanted the reveal to come further into the relationship, and most preferably closer to when their movie released, but it was what it was. It wasn't bad press, except for the articles that claimed that the murder of Emmett Hale led Briar Honeycutt to lesbianism. She and her manager, a lesbian herself, had laughed about it. It was dealt with quickly, to say the least. Life was going well. That was until all of her electronics disappeared in the morning again. It was all okay until she went downstairs to make herself coffee, and there it was on her dining room table with her team, close friends, and two police officers. Evelyn Palmer, 30, white female, found unresponsive in her home.
Hollywood scandal! I think it's the manager. I think it was the manager because the manager was really persistent trying to hire her, which I get is totally normal for Hollywood, but I have no other suspects. So therefore, I think it's the manager, and I think the manager is obsessed.
Wow. Okay. Well, sure. I'll accept this theory. After not showing up on set, a friend offered to go to her house to make sure that she was okay. After all, she had a key. Upon searching the house, she found her neck deep in a bathtub of her own blood.
Holy shit. I'm sorry. Hollywood scandal. It's just that was really jarring.
Yeah, this one is actually, this is the more jarring of the two murders.
I don't know. Actually, probably the other one was more jarring just for its obscenity. You know, this one is more jarring because
it's more gruesome.
Well, actually, I don't know what's more gruesome. Having your penis cut off and shoved in your mouth when you're dead or maybe alive. Or being in a bathtub filled of your own blood. Both are pretty bad, but objectively, I do not have a penis. And therefore, yeah. I don't quite know what that would be like. But I imagine it would be unpleasant. Can you imagine if he was alive when they did that? Like,
the pain of having it cut off and then for added measure. Police were contacted. Iron-stomached investigators learned that she had two long cuts from her shoulder to her hip meeting over her heart. There was some clear carving there, leaving her heart exposed. It had been pulled forward, pieces of her ribs stuck in it. She had been clearly repositioned, as her body was firmly locked in a position to make it look as though she were simply taking a normal bath. Her head leaned back, eyes shut, her arms on the outside of it. The bloodied water had covered her wounds. In the samples of blood that they took, she had been sedated at the time of the murder. There were no notes, but pictures were, once again, glued to the walls with her blood. Photos of her and Briar, sexual, not sexual, everything in between. Text conversations between them. This was the same murderer. But who? The same issue existed for this investigation. So I'm going to ask you now, which one do you think is more horrifying? Because now that you have the whole story of the bath.
I guess it all depends on what happened when. Because objectively, the second one is more gruesomely horrifying. But if it was done to her post-mortem, it's not like she felt the pain of that. Whereas, I don't know, it depends. If they were both alive for the maiming, I think the latter is worse.
I think that the first was worse because she was sedated in the second one. Like, she wasn't entirely there, you know? Like, she...
Did it happen while she was still alive, or did she get, like, killed, and then they started fucking with her, like, heart and carving and stuff.
It says that she had sedation in her blood. Like, someone had clearly made the attempt to sedate her.
Oh, so she was probably alive to prevent her from fighting back. Oh my god. Okay. This is homophobia.
Is it a Hollywood scandal?
You might even say.
There was nothing left behind. Whoever had done this was incredibly thorough and had no real intent of being caught. They had two links. The murdered were intimate with Briar Honeycutt, and the killer had photographic evidence of it. It wasn't enough. Briar once again submitted herself to the investigators. There was no lead, no suspect. Perfect crimes hardly ever happened once, but twice? Briar Honeycutt, murderer? Briar Honeycutter, did she murder Evie Patel and Emmett Hale?
Yeah, okay. My theory is continuing about this manager. Because the text conversations. This manager clearly has access to her electronics. Because she keeps taking them in the morning. Along with this team.
That's true. She keeps showing up in her house and taking her electronics and putting them all in one place.
and she's hyper involved in her life, it's the manager. Okay, keep going.
Okay. Okay. Briar had never been more distraught in her life. Seeing what she had with a girl that she had started to love, someone who had been there for her after the last, she retreated to her home and refused to exit. However, one man was not willing to accept defeat in the case, a detective on his last strike.
Yeah! I love those kinds of stories.
If he was going to go out, he was going to go out with a bang, click, bang. Off hours, he showed up to Briar Honeycutt's house. She was the only real constant in the situation, and the only way to get the killer to show themselves. If there was anyone they needed, it was her. Despite being beyond wanting answers, Briar agreed to talk with him. He proposed to her that he could figure out who was doing it should she get another partner. She disagreed immediately. She didn't want answers in the first place. She didn't care. She was killing people. People were dying from simply wanting to kiss her. As far as Briar Honeycutt was concerned, she was the murderer, which the detective found unproductive. He returned a few days later with her manager, who took it as carefully as she could, assuring her that she deserved the love and it was up to him to let her have it. But with the threat still out there, she was right. She couldn't be loved, and she was a celebrity. The person doing this was clearly insane. Who knew if this love was all they were going to stop at? Headline: Briar Honeycutt's next victim.
Hollywood scandal.
Hand in hand with a scrawny-looking man, the bait was set. Her team had hired the highest level of security guard they could possibly buy for the plan, for the both of them. The rom-com actress had no issues playing the lovesick dove, and her awkward scene partner was better at shooting than he was at flirting. Luckily, it didn't matter. A relationship was a relationship when it was following Briar Honeycutt. Even a fake one would get press. When the press had gathered enough images of her and the boy being intimate, when they caught them on dates, they stationed police officers inside of his home, prepped to catch the killer in the act. Sure enough, a woman entered his home, covered head to toe in black, a backpack strapped onto her. Its contents were indicative of a planned murder. She had steak knives, hydrogen peroxide, ammonia, a camera, and various other supplies. Arrested on the scene for breaking and entering, she complied with the police without uttering a single word. Her home was forcefully searched. In her office, the walls were pinboards, with hundreds of pictures of Briar Honeycutt up on them. Strings were tied along them to links that she had in five different colors. Red, pink, yellow, black, and blue. They were tied between her various connections, which had groupings of pictures for each one. Her family, her friends, her enemies, everyone. She kept track of her every move, and for all of her connections, every move. Listen, if you thought high blood pressure was the silent killer, you clearly haven't met Caroline Brooker, who was only defined by the driver's license found in her home. She walked where she was told, but she refused to speak. When questioned, she said nothing. She stared forward, stone-faced. They'd found their killer, she was well-trained, and she let nothing slip. No detective, police officer, no intern, nor lawyer could get even a gasp out of her.
Okay. I think, obviously, that's not the manager. She was hired by the manager. She's a professional killer.
Okay. But Briar Honeycutt, sitting across from her, alone in the room, was able to get a full confession live on television. It was her one catch. It had to be televised. It didn't matter if she felt like a killer. She needed the world to know that she didn't kill them. They needed someone to blame. The press needed a killer, and she was a celebrity. Her job was to be the people's person. So, they discovered who Caroline Brooker was. Remember a really long time ago when we were talking about the circle of fame? There are plenty of people that benefit from one famous person. There's the manager, an agent, PR, etc. They have a team, but it goes further than that. One of them is Caroline Brooker's job, making sure that the public has a fine picture of where that well-oiled machine was unable to succeed in creating the perfect human being. Welcome to the wide, intrusive world of paparazzi. The name Caroline Brooker might not even ring a bell for the people of her universe. However, where her name is unrecognized, her photography sure as hell is. Reposted hundreds, thousands, perhaps even millions of times, she's managed to build herself a fine reputation as paparazzi. The average person in LA would have seen her work, plastered on the front page of the newspaper, in an article that they just couldn't resist, in an online drama show, to be printed out and taped onto the walls. Her work is everywhere. Superstar Valeria Graham spotted with Justin Moyer, Caroline Brooker. Robin Walsh in recovery from a nose job, Caroline Brooker. Alice Page, pregnant with co-star Tate Clark's child, husband in ruin. Caroline motherfucking Brooker. If there's a scoop to be found, Caroline will find it. It earned her the pseudonym Bloodhound, which she prefers to operate under when selling her photos, her proof, her information. It's how the news sites knew to contact her, the name addressed on her P.O. box. However much respect she'd gathered from the news sites, Caroline Brooker's morning routine starts in a two-bedroom apartment overlooking the city. No pets to her name, she found them a hindrance to her work. A person with a pet can't drop everything to fly 3 hours off of a series of liked posts, nor can she worry about a single thing getting between herself and work. The right set of information resulted in death threats, but to a woman who loved only one thing in the world, none of it mattered. She continues her mornings silently, the sounds of typing and sipping coffee being the only ones surrounding her. She kept alerts for who she knew best. If Trinity Schultz's daughter so much as moved a muscle publicly, Caroline would know it. See, that was the trick. Stars had teams of people around them to manage what they did online. They had alternative accounts to be a regular person on. But Caroline knew that no celebrity was immune to human connection, and that was how to follow them. If Trinity Schultz's daughter was liking posts in Indiana, she knew she was out of town. Why? Well, she'd check with her management then. Working on a project was child's play. Anyone could get their cheap shots from sneak peeks of the latest period drama, but when nothing from her team indicated that they were checking in on Indiana, she had a lead. Trinity Schultz's love affair, her daughter's real father?
Hollywood scandal.
But it wasn't every day that she had to catch a flight to get the deepest, darkest secret. Oftentimes, they were just in town. So, after she'd gotten her coffee, she went to her second bedroom and moved apart the cluttered stacks of papers and pictures amongst the boxes of them. And she'd write down her leads on sticky notes. It was best not to have anything on a laptop for too long, too easy to get into. A clear laptop kept people away from suspecting her. Caroline would spend an hour or two copying her thoughts into a journal, moving important pieces onto sticky notes, tacking them to her wall. When it was all settled, she had a direction to move in. She grabbed her camera and headed out for the day. She'd get her shots, her information, check her P.O. box, and when she got home, she transferred all to physical evidence once more. Pictures would move to USB drives. They'd be printed if she wanted to send them to publishers to purchase. It was harder to steal an image if one received a physical copy of it. She'd check up on the news sites that had her photos on them on her phone as she brushed her teeth, before checking her text before bed. Sometimes she'd have a spam text, but even those were rare. She'd write a text to her mother, but she'd always deleted it. It was about as effective as a prayer with her urn in the living room. She connected her phone to the charger, set the alerts on, and played a single-player game until she fell asleep. Routine was good. It kept her stable, kept her sane. Well, that and Briar Honeycutt, of course. Caroline had heard of Briar for years, naturally. It was part of her job to keep track of up-and-coming celebrities. Racist background? She'd find it. Bully in middle school? That was her. She'd done a few pictures on her, but Briar was well protected. She kept to herself for most of her life, and her team wasn't really one to fuck around. She wasn't getting DUIs, she wasn't doing lines, she was a bit messy in her relationships, but it wasn't really anything to bring in money. When it was, she'd send pictures to her team before, only to get paid off. However, on a particularly dull day when she was waiting at a coffee shop where she knew Owen Reynolds was going to meet his assistant, who, at the time, he was having sex with.
Hollywood scandal. No, I was gasping because I remember the detail, the coffee. You talked about the coffee at the beginning. Oh, you clever. Oh, okay. I get it now.
Briar had bumped into her and spilled her coffee on her. Caroline counted herself lucky that she hadn't been wearing her camera. She was ready to get the classic celeb brush off, but Briar only came to her with absolute horror in her own actions, which is a rarity for a celebrity. She gushed over her, loaned her a trial merch shirt that was in her car, and awkwardly stumbled over herself as she repeatedly apologized. She bought her a coffee and a muffin and insisted on chatting with her. Caroline had taken the opportunity to try to get dirt on her, but the more she spoke, she realized that this girl was something else. They ended up having an hour-long conversation, and Briar had even told her to say hi if she saw her again. She hugged her. Caroline recounted it as the first hug that she'd had since her mother's funeral.
Oh.
Yeah. From that point onwards, there were two things that mattered in life. Getting the scoop and Briar Honeycutt. According to what she told Breyer, her lack of a real scandal was because of her. With her connections in the paparazzi business, she anonymously warned the team when a scandal was coming so they could circumvent it. She implied that she'd, quote-unquote, taken someone out for their pictures before, as well as admitting to breaking and entering on multiple accounts to destroy the cameras of those who had taken pictures of her. In her apartment, there were more than 15 mildly damaged SD cards with the last photos taken of Breyer on them, presumed to be the property of other photographers that she had robbed. She insisted that her sexual partners just had to go, as after the first one, she couldn't risk another sex scandal. It was better to just take out a few of her partners. Breyer wouldn't date anyone anymore, and she'd be safe again. She'd be the perfect angel atop the sparkling Christmas tree once more. She had all of the experience that she needed to pull off a murder. Sure, it was hard to figure out how to murder someone, but with enough true crime podcasts, she felt that anyone could do it. And they could. Or she could, at least.
I would like to state, for the record, this is not a true crime podcast, but, listeners, do not commit murder.
We do not condone it.
We do not condone murder, and one should never use our podcast as a guidebook to committing murder, because the truth is, I don't think either Belle or I could commit a murder if we really wanted to.
We could not.
So, whatever we've written is fiction to the highest degree. We can't pull off a murder.
No.
Don't listen to us, and don't murder anyone.
And remember, this is fictional, so sometimes we brush over details and then put glitter on it so you don't notice.
Exactly.
So just keep that in mind when you're listening to us. I actually earlier in the podcast went ammonium and other supplies because I didn't know what removed DNA.
Exactly. You know what? I have had multiple cases where mid in them, Belle has had to be like, wait a minute. Because luckily she pointed out a really good plot hole that I quickly patched up before we put the episode on air. We don't know how to commit a murder. We don't murder anyone. Don't murder anyone.
It takes us a while to write episodes because we don't know how to murder anyone.
This is very true. Also, we don't know how the law works.
We don't. That's why we just keep going and then they went to jail.
It is. Well, actually, that's the worst part, is we're constantly like, oh, they went to jail. Jail and prison are different things. Jail is before your trial. Prison is after your trial.
I actually said jailed in this next paragraph.
We are fiction writers who are fun enough that hopefully you won't notice our errors.
You might still.
You're able to send them in, but please be nice.
And we'll address them.
We will.
And we'll be like, sorry.
We'll do it in the Q&A, which you'll hear more about in just a minute, as usual. But anyway, sorry, keep going.
Or she could. But it was for a good cause, she said. It was for her. It was all for Breyer Honeycutt. Naturally, Caroline was sent to prison for the highest extent that the law could allow.
What did that sentence say that you just changed? Based on what we just were talking about, does it not say Caroline was jailed to the highest extent that the law can allow?
Listen, she did go to a jail cell.
Reiterating our points, don't use this as a guide for any sort of legal matters either.
Oh, please don't.
Oh, God, please don't.
Unless you want to talk about our universes, we make up really good laws for our universes because then we can make them fit our story.
They are conveniently always what we need them to be to further our plot.
Yes, of course. Oh, look, it's the one piece of research I did.
Oh!
The death sentence is illegal in California, so really she was to spend the last... Oh, I said prison! She was to
Good
spend
job.
The rest of her life in prison. Good for me.
I'm very proud of you.
She said that the risk was worth it to keep Breyer safe. Speaking of the angel, Breyer Honeycutt abstained from any future sexual relationships and was unable to complete the rom-com she was working on, partially because her co-star died. In fact, she was stopped from doing them entirely and only took parts that didn't require romance or a sex scene. There were no amounts of promises that could get her to do it. She was rumored to be difficult to work with following, as she would suffer flashbacks on sets and struggle to remember her lines. Her career suffered a gradual decline, however, the recent news titles are promising. Breyer Honeycutt willingly committed to a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. Send in your thoughts, theories, questions, and comments to to our podcast. Send it in.
You know it's been a minute, Wynn.
UntrueCrimeThePodcast@gmail.com. All lowercase for a chance to be featured at the end of the season during our Q&A. Goodbye, and do not commit any scandals.
Goodbye. Hollywood scandals.